Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Suta Goswami said, "The Lord, thus hearing the prayers of Kunti Devi, composed in choice words for His glorification, mildly smiled. That smile was as enchanting as His mystic power." Anything that is enchanting in the world is said to be a representation of the Lord. The conditioned souls who are engaged in trying to lord it over the material world are also enchanted by His mystic powers, but His devotees are enchanted in a different way by the glories of the Lord, and His merciful blessings are upon them. His energy is displayed in different ways, as electrical energy works in manifold capacities. Srimati Kunti Devi has prayed to the Lord just to enunciate a fragment of His glories. All His devotees worship Him in that way, by chosen words, and therefore the Lord is known as Uttama Shloka. No amount of chosen words is sufficient to enumerate the Lord's glories, and yet He is satisfied by such prayers as the Father is satisfied even by the broken linguistic attempts of the growing child. The word Maya is used both in the sense of delusion and mercy. Herein the word Maya is used in the sense of the Lord's mercy upon Kunti Devi. Suta uvacha pratayetam kalapadai parinuta kilodayaha mandang jahasavai kunto mohayanneva mayaya. Suta Goswami said, "The Lord, thus hearing the prayers of Kunti Devi, composed in choice words for His glorification, mildly smiled. That smile was as enchanting as His mystic power." Om Ajnana Timarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamahyam Dadati Svapadantika Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupang Sagrajataham Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parichana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padahan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vikamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabando Jagatpati Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastate Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Brinda Vinishvare Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Haripriye Vanshakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So thank you all for coming. And thank you in advance for tolerating my attempt at giving a Bhagavatam class. If you give me your blessings, maybe I can say something inspiring. Thank you, Hare Krishna. So it's all kirtan. This is a verse about kirtan because it's about glorification. When we chant the Mangala Charana, that's kirtan. We do it congregationally. So kirtan is the Yuga Dharma, and it takes various forms. It's said that Vyasaki Kirtani, the son of Vyasadev, he became perfect through kirtan. What was the meaning of this kirtan? It was recitation of the Bhagavatam. When Sukadeva Goswami spoke the Bhagavatam, he attained perfection, and that perfection is described as kirtan. So when we glorify the Lord, in various ways. We can have guna kirtan, glorify the Lord's qualities. Rupa kirtan, we glorify the Lord's form. Then, of course, there's nam kirtan. So nam kirtan is the main type of kirtan the Hare Krishna movement is famous for. So the fact that Kunti Devi is engaged in kirtan is an indication of her purity. It's an interesting question. Does she have any material desires? There seems to be an indication that when she prays, let me try and find it. Sneha Pasham Imam Chindi Dridam Pandushu Vrishnishu. She wants that the Sneha Pash, the attachment, the rope of affection to her kinsman is cut. Does that mean she's impure? Does she have a false desire? Of course, some people ask, why even cut the attraction at all? Because the Pandus and the Vrishnis are devotees. And that's actually correct. But then Prabhupada explains in a purport, it's the skin attachment that she wants to be cut. It's not the attachment to those personalities as devotees. It's the personal skin attachment. You know, you have sometimes on television, they have these arguments, who's the father? And they do a DNA test, right? And then there's a big fight afterwards, or someone starts crying, or, oh no, I wanted it to be this person. Because we think that DNA is us. So therefore, if the DNA of the child is half my DNA, then I am the father, and then there's a connection there. I know one devotee is very magnanimous. He discovered that his son wasn't genetically his. Didn't change him a slightest. He just brought up the son as his own. That is how we should see things. So skin attachment should be broken. I don't think Queen Kunti has any skin attachment. She's a pure devotee. But out of humility, she's speaking this way. Actually, the character of Queen Kunti is a challenge to modern values in a number of ways. First of all, we should understand the liberal, the non-sectarian, the non-sexist, ultimately non-sexist Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, that we have the woman is now the guru of the acharyas. Srila Prabhupada, his favorite section of the Bhagavatam was the prayers of Queen Kunti. And as has recently been pointed out, he discussed endlessly about those particular prayers and also the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj. So our acharyas, they are devotees of Queen Kunti. So that's the preeminent position of a shiksha guru, whether in a male or female body. But where the challenge is, Kunti herself says, Katam pasyema hi striyaha. How can we women understand you? So she's very advanced, but she herself is taking a humble position. Now, humility should, in the right circumstances, draw out humility in others. If someone's very humble, then it tends to be endearing and it draws out humility in others. So the ideal situation in the Gaudiya Vaishnava community is women are humble about their position and then they're raised to a high platform. But when it goes wrong, and it goes wrong for various reasons, we don't want to blame any particular group. It goes wrong. It's Kali Yuga, Manda Sumanda Matayo. Men and women are all imbalanced, disturbed. We get this imbalance. So we end up with fighting, and it's a type of materialism. It can cloud our nice community, where we get certain people are fighting for position and people are pushing people down. And the kind of mood of pushing people down, that's unspiritual. Whereas the mood of pulling people up is the opposite. So if women are respected and elevated, and they in turn are humble, then we have a nice environment. So we see the teachings of Queen Kunti, they are a challenge to this kind of mentality that has infected our society. And it's a challenge in two ways, because on the one hand, those that think women have the low position, they should understand the elevated position of Queen Kunti. And on the other hand, women that want to really bang the drum about equality, feminism and everything, they should understand that the greatest women, they have it within their hearts to be humble. And if humility is not reciprocated, then Prabhupada said, you can leave. Prabhupada said, if the husband has fallen, then the wife can leave. She just practices her spiritual life, takes shelter of of the Son or the Father, and she should practice her spiritual life like that. So it's not like a prison. And another example is when Pandu, remember the story is Pandu approached Madri with amorous desire, and he died. He was cursed that way. And at that time, Madri and Kunti were discussing who should enter the funeral pyre. And they both wanted to. Kunti wanted to follow Pandu to the heavenly planets. She wanted to enter the funeral pyre. And Madri did too. But then it was agreed that Kunti would stay and look after all the five sons. That itself is also, cannot be understood by the modern mentality. There's no conception of it. Now, if you notice, the caste system is extremely unpopular outside of anyone who doesn't understand the scientific basis of the caste system, called the Varnashram system. Anyone who does not understand that scientific basis, they really are against the caste system. Why? Because it puts people on a certain platform. It's a platform that's rigid and a platform in which the higher can exploit the lower. That is what the Aracharyas call the vitiated caste system. It is historically correct, that narrative. However, if you have to scrape, look under the surface, you find the gems of this beautiful Varnashram system. But that requires intelligence. And unfortunately, in this day and age, intelligence is very hard to come by. So it's very difficult to get through to someone the actual true nature of the caste system. It said in the seventh canto, Yasya yal lakshanam proktam varnashraba vijan kaha. Yadan yatrapi drishyata tatinaiva venirdishit. And if you see someone with a certain quality, you should understand that to be their caste, not the family that they're born into. So it's ironic, but it's tragically ironic, that the very thing that we are fighting against, namely caste by birth, is sometimes what the Hare Krishnas are accused of, or Hinduism in general is accused of. We're actually on the same side as people when they say equality of opportunity. And the caste system is fluid. We have so many examples. Vishvamitra, for example, he was a Kshatriya who then became a Brahmana. So the caste system's fluid, but it's not appreciated. So there's a lot of things that, if you scrape behind the surface, there's gold. This Vedic culture is golden. And even though we struggle to implement it, Prabhupada gave the example that this Vedic culture is like an elephant. What does he mean by that? Anyone know that? What's he saying? Tell me. Okay. The elephant is valuable whether it's dead or alive. An alive elephant's valuable, a dead elephant's valuable. So even if the Varnashram system is struggling, or we're struggling to implement it, it's still valuable like that. And going back to the sati, right? So people just can't understand. They see it as exploitation of women. And it was that. Prabhupada gives the example. He said it started to become a case of throwing the woman into the fire. She didn't want to go. She had no natural devotion to do so. And that's when the British outlawed it. And that was the correct thing to do. But people with superficial vision, they can't see anything deeper than that. And here's, I like to compare it to one of the greatest romantic tragedies, Romeo and Juliet. Now, in this pastime, Juliet, she kills herself because she thinks Romeo's dead, right? So this is the height of romance. I mean, this is just such a wonderful, attractive play by Shakespeare. But then if a married woman thinks, I cannot live without my husband, and she enters the fire, it doesn't really attract people so much. Maybe because she's married, you know. It's not so romantic, right? If she's unmarried and she kills herself out of love for her paramour, then it's very romantic. So where is the appreciation of that? It's beyond the bodily platform. Where is the appreciation that a woman can have so much devotion for her husband that she'd rather leave her body than be separated from her husband? That aspect is just, it doesn't compute in the modern mindset. They simply see it as a system where women were repressed and forced to enter the funeral pyre. which is just, it was the, that was the contaminated practice that it led to. But the original, we shouldn't throw out the baby with the bathwater, so to speak. So that's something about culture and Kunti Devi, how she's, we can learn a lot from her character. So here's, I found it quite interesting in the purport that the Prabhupada gives an explanation of the word Maya. So Maya is used both in the sense of delusion and mercy. So let's try and understand that. Why is Maya, why does the word Maya mean mercy? Any ideas? If you look at the word-for-word translation of Maya or Mayaya, you'll find most of the time it means the illusory energy, right? Any other synonyms? Sometimes it means something else. Okay, that's an, yeah. Maya can be broken down as ma, not, ya, this. Any other things? Here's another example. Pratyanoda Thakur, this is not in the synonyms, he says, miyate anaya iti maya. The meaning of maya means that by which we measure. So like science, Prabhupada used to like bash science. The scientific method of attaining knowledge is you take the higher position and you analyze something that's less than yourself. And that's the measuring propensity, that measuring miyate anaya iti maya. The ma dhatu, in terms of Sanskrit roots, ma means to measure. So miyate anayeti maya means maya is that by which we measure. So when we use the ascending process of knowledge, we analyze things, we'll never understand because ultimately it's maya. We may give the example of, suppose we have an ant crawling on our skin. The ant's analyzing us. There's a hair, there's a freckle, there's a pore, there's some sweat. But what does the ant actually know about the bigger picture? Does the ant understand that it's an arm? It's attached to a body, there's a brain, there's a conscious living entity, the whole bigger picture? Of course not. So when material scientists, they try to understand this material universe, they're like the ant sitting on a human being. They don't have the capacity to do so. Therefore, even though they're very successful in this reductionist way of analyzing the world, still the bigger picture they have not understood. So that's an indication of Maya. Yoga Maya, that's what I was thinking of. Sometimes the word Maya means Yoga Maya. And in the 11th canto, there's a famous Sad Buddh verse. It's a wonderful verse. It's my favorite verse of the 11th canto. And in that verse, it says, Maya Mrigam Dayata Epsitam Anvadavad Vande Mahapurushate Charnaravindam. Now, it's called the Sad Buddh verse because the verse simultaneously applies to Lord Ram, Lord Krishna, and Lord Chaitanya. So when it applies to Lord Krishna, Maya Mriga means he is like an animal, Mriga, a toy, pet animal in the hands of Maya. And Maya means Radharani. Radharani is the origin of Yoga Maya. So Maya can mean Radharani. So for me, when it says Maya means mercy, I think Maya means Radharani. Radharani's mercy. Because when her divine potency touches us, then we have that ultimate mercy that Bhakti awakens in our hearts, and that is mercy. The Sad Buddh verse, when applied to Lord Chaitanya, Mriga means Mrigayate, means to look at, look to search for. So the conditioned souls, they are searching after Maya, the illusory energy. That is their business. So they're referred to as Maya Mriga. So Krishna, when he's Maya Mriga, he's chasing after Radharani. In Lord Chaitanya's case, Lord Chaitanya's doing the chasing. He's chasing after the Maya Mrigas, the conditioned souls who are averse to Krishna and who are chasing after Maya. And probably the most obvious meaning is when it's applied to Lord Ram. Maya Mriga, in the case of Lord Ram's pastime, means? What does it mean? Maya Mriga. What does Mriga mean? It means the deer. Maya Mriga means the illusory deer that was created, Maricha. So Lord Ram chased after the deer in order to please Mother Sita. So the verse simultaneously means all three things. And the first part of the verse is another story which we leave for another class, because you could actually give a whole class on that one verse. It's well worth reading, and the purport is very illuminating. Now here's another meaning for the word Maya, knowledge. It's not mentioned in the purport. But if you look at the pastime of Lord Varaha, he's described as the Maya Maya Shukara. Sukara. Sukara means the boar. And Maya, Maya, means he's made of Maya. And in the purport, Prabhupada explains that means he is knowledge. Because all the incarnations of the Lord are knowledge personified, right? He's illusion as well. When Lord Varaha is fighting with Hiranyaksha, at one point Hiranyaksha grabs him in a bear hug. And what happens next? Suddenly, by his mystic power, this transcendental boar appears outside of the arms of Hiranyaksha. So he's a magician. He can conjure up things. So that's what it means to say that he's Maya, Maya, Maya. And the other answer was Maya, Maya means mercy. Of course, all the incarnations are coming to give mercy to us, to deliver us. You know, Dharma, Sangha, Sthapanartaya. They all establish Dharma. And by establishing Dharma, they allow us to attain our Dharma. And what is our Dharma? Jivera Sarupahoi Krishnera Nityadas, to be eternal servants of Krishna. It's interesting, Prabhupada gives examples. Water is wet, chili is hot, sugar is sweet. He says, the microphone, its dharma is to amplify. So what is our dharma? What is our nature? It is to serve Krishna. And actually the word dharma, in terms of Sanskrit grammar, is related to the word characteristic or nature. Because it means to that which sustains the nature of an object. So if our nature is to be a devotee of Krishna, then what will sustain that? The obvious answer is devotional service. Therefore, when Srimad Bhagavatam begins, it says, Dharma Prajita Kaitavotra. We give up all the other dharma, but we do the one dharma that will sustain us. Savai Pumshamparo Dharma Yato Bhaktiradhokshaji Ahoy Tukya Pratiyata Yayatma Suprasidati. The one dharma is to engage full time in the service of the Lord, like that. Now this said, Yatrinvantam Rasagyanam Svadu Svadu Pade Pade. The Bhagavatam is relished over and over again, but for those that have a taste, those that have a good heart, I have a stone heart. I cannot understand all the rasa. It's quite amazing when you look at the work of Rupa Goswami that if you analyze in his Nectar of Devotion or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindha, he analyzes all the different types of prema and all the different categories, all the sanchari bhavs, the vibhavs, the anubhavs and so forth, and the sattvika bhavs. And then he looks at all the ways they interact. And for every example, he'll pull a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam and say, this verse indicates this type of anubhav in that situation. This is the anubhav when Krishna's the object. This is the anubhav when the devotee's the loving object. And the analysis is endless, page after page. But he can do that because his heart is soft. So when he reads a verse and he reads a passage of Srimad Bhagavatam, it's newer, it's ever fresh. So we aspire to be like that. But for those that, like myself, who don't understand, at least we can understand theoretically that this particular part of the Bhagavatam is a very heart-rending moment where Krishna is leaving the Pandavas and Kunti's prayers are inspired by feelings of separation. So I'd like to say something about separation because it's coming up both in the Chaitanya Charitamrita section at the moment in relation to Ratha Yatra and the gopis meeting Krishna at Kurukshetra. And it's also coming up here. And Queen Kunti's feeling separation at the thought of Krishna departing. Now, one wonderful Vaishnav, Gaur Govinda Maharaj, he has described the separation when Akrura takes Krishna away from Vrindavan. And he's analyzed it very nicely. It's very inspiring, and he's analyzed union, and it's also very inspiring. So I'll share some of the things that he's said on this topic because I find it very interesting. He explains that separation, and the word is varaha, there are three types of separation. There's separation before the separation happens. That's called Bhuta Varaha. It means, for example, when Akrura comes to Vrindavan, already the gopis are starting to feel separation because they know that he's going to take Krishna away. So the Krishna's still there, but they're already feeling the separation at the thought. Then there's Bhavan Varaha. That is the separation when Krishna is actually leaving. And then there's Bhavita Varaha. That's the separation after Krishna has left. So you'll find all these three there in the lives of the gopis. But as Govinda Maharaj points out, he says, of the three, the most intense is, anyone know? The last one, Bhavita. No, it's actually Bhavan, when it's actually happening. When Krishna is actually leaving, that's the most intense separation. That's when the gopis were trying to commit suicide. They were jumping under the chariot, giving up their bodies in attempting to. Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai, Sri Sri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, Sri Sri Gornitai Ki Jai. So the feeling, the first two, they're there when Akrura is present. And afterwards, well, the whole Ratha Yatra festival is based on the feelings that the gopis had when they went to Kurukshetra. And one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, he in order to try and help us understand this mood of separation, he explained that it's like if there's a football match going on and the ball almost crosses over the goal line but doesn't, then that's a great loss. And the supporters are like, oh, they're so frustrated. So it's the same kind of feeling when the gopis came to Kurukshetra, because there is Krishna, they're right in front of them, and yet it wasn't the right place. Why? Because they weren't in Vrindavan. It's all these soldiers, elephants, kings. It's very opulent. From the material perspective, it's very grand, and there's an insignificant group of village girls there that no one pays much attention to. But in terms of the rasa, it's exactly the opposite. It's that relationship between the gopis and Krishna that is the highlight of the Kurukshetra Leela. So Prabhupada, as I mentioned a few classes ago, Prabhupada once said, first Kurukshetra Leela, then Rasa Leela. But if you think about it, after Rasa Leela comes another Kurukshetra Leela of separation. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it was back to Siddhanta Sarasvati, who was quoting Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He said, people who are shallow, they like Vrindavan. But people who are deeper, they like Kurukshetra. And that's a strange statement. But the actual meaning is, Kurukshetra is known as a place of separation, where if any service is rendered at Kurukshetra, it draws a great amount of mercy from Srimati Radharani. Now, we can give an example in the Ramayana. Kaikeya, she was awarded two boons from Dasharatha Maharaj. And the reason was, she helped him at a time of great need. He was injured on the battlefield. So when you serve someone in their hour of need, you get a great reward. So the idea is, recent acharyas have said, if you want to get the most out of your bhajan, then do your bhajan in Kurukshetra, because that's where Radharani's heart is bursting, and she will reward you endlessly for your service to her. The whole thing about separation, it's a wonderful tattva, and those different places have different meanings. Kanyakumari, anyone heard of this place? Kanyakumari. It's the place where the unmarried gopis were praying to Katyayani to have Krishna as their husband. So that is the particular place of separation for the unmarried gopis. But for the married gopis, Kurukshetra is the place of separation, according to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Now, Kanyakumari, it's said to be three times Vipralamba. The separation is three times more intense. Jagannath Puri is Vipralamba Kshetra. It's the place of separation. That's where Lord Chaitanya was residing, feeling pains of separation from Srimati Radharani. Sorry, from Krishna. That's Vipralamba Kshetra. And if you have it threefold. You get this place, Kanyakumari, which is where the gopis were praying to have Krishna as their husband. And it said that Alarnath, which is just near Jagannath Puri, that's where Lord Chaitanya went when Lord Jagannath, his darshan is restricted just before the Ratha Yatra. That is Dvi Gunata Vipralamba, means it's double separation. Because, I mean, you think about Lord Chaitanya, he's feeling separation, but at least he sees Shama Sundar when he sees Jagannath. But when he can't see Jagannath either, then that's double separation. And it's such an intense separation that there's a stone, you can go there, there's a stone that's melted. Because his love was so intense that it melted stone. There's also a Gaudiya mat just there. It's called the Brahma Gaudiya mat, because Lord Brahma also worshipped there at this place called Alarnath, which is an abbreviation or a slightly corrupted way of saying Alvarnath. The Alvars, the descendants, the Vaishnavs were descendants of worshippers of the Alvars. So the Vaishnavs that worshipped at Alarnath, they, because of them, their presence, the place got known as Alvarnath, or the deity there is known as Alvarnath, which then becomes Alarnath. And it's a four-armed deity, although for Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we see it as two-armed if we have that vision. So that's a little bit about the feelings of separation. So we know the past time when Lord Chaitanya, there was a song, as far as I understand, and I've heard from several sources, this was not a spiritual song as such. It was just a kind of popular song of the time. Ya kaumara harasa eva hivaras ta eva chaitra kshapas techon milita malate surabaya prauda kadamba nilaha sacha vasmi tatapi tatra surata vyapara lila vidau reva rodasi vetasi tarutale Chita Samutkantati. It was just a popular song of the time, and it's the meaning is, you are the same paramour of my youth. This is the same forest. This is the same smell of the malati fragrance. I am the same lover, and however, I want to take you back to that place. Under the Reva Rodasi, where the Reva River runs, under the Rodasi tree. I want to take you to that place. It's kind of some kind of romantic thing. So Lord Chaitanya would say this. And then amazingly enough, it's a very deep verse. And amazingly enough, Rupa Goswami understood it. And then he composed another verse. Priyaso yam Krishna sahachari kurukshetra militas tataham sarada Tadida Mubayor Sangama Sukham. What's the next verse? Panchame Jushi. Tatapyanta Kelan. Madura Murali. Panchama Jushi. Manome Kalindi Pulina Vipinaya Spri Hayati. He then gives his purport to that verse, which is saying it's actually the mood of Radharani. Radharani's at Kurukshetra, and she says, This is Kurukshetra. You know, you're the same Krishna, I'm the same Radha. However, I want to take you back to Vrindavan on the bank of the Yamuna in the forest of Vrindavan and hear the fifth note of your beautiful flute. So that was what actually Lord Chaitanya was thinking. And so Rupa Goswami wrote this verse, and he put it on a palm leaf, and he put it in the thatch of his kutir. And one day Lord Chaitanya comes and he sees this palm leaf, and he pulls it out, and he's feeling astonishment. How did Rupa Goswami know my mind? So he asks Swarup Damodar, who knows everything, because he knows the meaning of the verse. And Swarup Damodar says, I can understand that you have given your special mercy to Rupa Goswami. And Lord Chaitanya confirmed, he said, yes, I have given him special mercy. And if you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, you'll find many verses where it said that Rupa Goswami is empowered by Lord Chaitanya. So that's and in fact, he says it himself at the beginning of Bhakti Rasamrita. Hridi yasya preranaya pravartitam varakurupopi vande Chaitanya devasya. Was it? Hare padakamalam. Anyway, what he's saying is, I worship the feet of Lord Chaitanya by his inspiration. Even though I am fallen, I can write this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It's all by the empowerment. So in conclusion, I mentioned there were three types of separation. The most intense being bhavan, or the actual moment when the gopis are, when Krishna's leaving Vrindavan. Gaura Govinda Maharaj explains further, there are three types of union. It's the same bhuta milana, before the meeting, bhavata milan, after they've already met, and then there's bhavan milan, when they're actually meeting. Now this he relates this to the fainting of Ramananda Roy. And you have to forgive me, it's such a high topic, but it's very inspirational. I'm just giving a theoretical understanding of it. So he asked the question, why did Ramananda Roy faint? First of all, who is Ramananda Roy in Krishna Lila? Vishakha, yes. So Vishakha has already seen Radha. She's already seen Krishna. She's seen them before they meet. She's seen them when they're embracing each other. So why is it that she faint? Why is it that Ramananda Roy, who is Vishakha, why does he faint when Lord Chaitanya reveals Radha Krishna and the golden doll all at the same time? Remember this vision he has. He sees Radha Krishna, a golden sannyasi. He sees Krishna with a golden hue. It's a very mystical experience. Is there a picture there? No, we don't have a picture. Anyway, you've probably seen the picture, right? It's a beautiful depiction of that scene. So Ramananda Roy fainted. So Gaura Govinda Maharaj, he explains why. He says, because of milana, I mentioned that the bhavan varaha, the point of separation is the most intense. It's the same with milana, union. The moment of union where Krishna enters Radharani's heart, that is the most amazing of all the three types of union. So although Vishakha has seen them separately before they meet and seen them after they meet, the actual meeting point where Krishna enters Radha's heart, Vishakha had not experienced that. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya is showing something a little extra to Vishakha in his incarnation as Ramananda Roy, and that's what causes him to faint, you see. So we can conclude from this that the Chaitanya Lila, although it's equal to the Krishna Lila, in another sense is actually greater. And it's actually greater both from Krishna's perspective, because he gets to experience the love of Radharani, which he couldn't understand in Krishna Lila. But also the devotees, they get to see this wonderful, you know, esoteric union of Radha and Krishna that even Vishakha did not experience. And I'll stop there. Hare Krishna. I'll leave some time for comments and questions. And then, Alec, please excuse me for talking about this topic, but it's there. It's in the Veda base, so it's allowed. Hare Krishna. You're all speechless. Hare Krishna. Yes.